A very good day to you. Welcome back to Marca's Eye on La Liga, the Spanish football podcast that's all English speaking, but staying in the beautiful game, in the beautiful country of España. It's been a rather dry week in terms of discussion points. The transfer window perhaps not providing the big moves to La Liga that we were hoping for. But in terms of on-the-pitch action, nothing was tastier than what we saw on Saturday night in the Bernabeu as Spain dismantled Italy 3-0. And we're going to be talking all about what the international break has meant, not only to the national team side, but perhaps as well to the flaring tempers between Barcelona and Real Madrid fans as well. Still a few boos for Gerard Piqué in the Bernabeu that evening. Joining me on the show today, two of the finest footballing minds Marca has to offer, a staple of the Eye on La Liga podcast. Joining us, Mark Mayo, at That Mark Mayo on Twitter. Mark, how you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm not too bad, thanks. All good down here. Preparing to go down to Spain myself in a couple of days.
Yeah, you and Simon Harrison on the same flight out to Spain. Is it tomorrow, Thursday, that you're off? I mean,
Then I'm hopefully going to the Valencia Atletico game to kick things off.
Just lay off the vodkas on the flight. That's all I'm saying. going to Valencia Atleti with a hangover, and you're on the job, Mark. At the end of the day, you're on the job. As well on the show today, joining us, the man who really is the heart and soul and leader of all things Eye on La Liga and Marca in English, Mr. David Chavón, or Dov, as we like to call him, at Dov Chavón on Twitter. How you doing, Dov, mate?
I'm all right. You said that this is the finest minds Marca has to offer, so I think there's not really much to offer if this is the best we've got.
But do get on to @MarcaInEnglish on Twitter and, of course, marca.com/EN to read what these fine minds have to offer. Dov, I mean, you're a fine footballing mind because you know all things Italian and Spanish. And not only that, you were able to get almost a coach's view for the Italy-Spain game this weekend, mate. You've been scurrying around the Bernabeu.
Yeah, it was interesting. Obviously, they got into the game. They managed to send me down to the pitch site. Instead of to where the press are supposed to sit. So I was down there next to the goal, seeing what was going on, getting a coach's view before I got quickly rushed to the stands where I was supposed to be.
You've obviously got that look about you of a very informed international team coach rather than a journalist, I have to say. And if you do turn up in full kit as well, mate, you're only asking that sort of thing. Let's talk about then what took place in the Bernabeu against Italy. Spain completely dismantling the Italians, as I say. And Dov, as you're there, I'll start with you. This was Spain suddenly back to its brilliant best again, perhaps against an Italy side that was slightly lacking, but a wonderful performance with that false number nine once again for the Spanish national side.
Yeah, I think the thing is going into the game, when the lineups were announced, that was when kind of a lot of us in the stands were like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Because Ventura played a 4-2-4, so he's got two guys in midfield against essentially Spain playing a six-man midfield, obviously with that false nine. So you've got an Asensio, Iniesta, Isco, Silva, Koke, Busquets. They all kind of pinged around each other and bounced off each other and really dominated De Rossi and Verratti, and both of them were, they just had no chance. And I think when that lineup was announced and you seen that Ventura was going for it, which I think he maybe had to do if Italy were going to win the group, it was just, it was on a hide into nothing, because you can't do that against Spain. You can't completely almost miss out on midfield against a team where their biggest strength is the midfielders they've got. So I think Italy almost played into Spain's hands, if you like, and gave them the game, and Spain took it with both hands and ran with it and did even better.
It was interesting to see how that midfield three in particular sat behind what was on paper the front three of Iniesta, Busquets and Koke kind of looked like, because there a number of people would have perhaps said, this probably isn't the strongest three that we've seen in a Spain midfield for some time, with Atleti struggling at the start of the season, of course, and Sergio Busquets and Iniesta perhaps seeing their better days, particularly Iniesta. But those three worked so well as the creators, and particularly someone like Busquets and Koke just anchoring the heart of the pitch, allowing Iniesta to have that freedom once again. And then you've just got these terriers around them, Mark, just working their socks off to push the play forward, keep possession in that front line and really disrupt the Italians.
Well, Iniesta looked fit again. He hasn't looked fit, most of last season, certainly not not this season when he's been playing. It's nice to see him actually get back to that stage of being comfortable in his movement, having that vision to get his head up and not being worried about being clattered by a midfielder. And as Dov says, there weren't any midfielders to clatter him, really. It was Verratti and De Rossi doing the work of three men each. And, you know, Ventura, there's a lot of criticism for what he set up, and we'll get onto that, no doubt. But the simple fact of the matter is that Lopetegui utilised what is Spain's best feature, their sort of playmaking midfield, and just said, go on, guys, go and do the job. And it worked. It was very simple. And I think the 3-0 scoreline, you know, there were a couple of chances for Italy to get a goal. Belotti had a header in the first half. But, you know, you've got to say it was deserved.
Yeah, it was by no means flattering the Spanish. I mean, the Italians kicked themselves in the foot slightly when you need players to disrupt the midfield and the heart of the pitch. And Verratti gets himself booked with a clumsy challenge after just 4 minutes. Means he's going to be playing 86 minutes on a yellow, and we've seen that he's a man that's pretty much guaranteed a booking and perhaps a sending off nine times out of ten, really. The Italian setup, you touched on it there, Mark, perhaps wasn't at its greatest, but it doesn't help when you're shooting yourself in the foot early on and getting key players putting in clumsy challenges like that.
Yeah, and it's one of those games where you know you're going to need those yellow cards. They're kind of like resources, aren't they? You want to spend them as late as you can or as most importantly as you can, and you can get away with it. A lot of referees won't book a player in the first 15 minutes for whatever reason. They'll want to see if they can let the game go. But the stall was set out very early on. There was no sort of room to manoeuvre for these players to do a little bit of giving and taking, a bit of something extra. It was all by the book. It was all very straightforward. The referee laid his marker down early on. And that was always going to be to Italy's detriment.
Dov, is there a problem with the Italian setup in terms of, as a 4-4-2 system, the way that they really want to be going? We've seen, of course, the national team have success with three at the back. Defensively is always where the quality seems to be in Italian football, and perhaps with midfield distributors. They're obviously missing a player like Pirlo. You could never replace a legend like that in the heart of the pitch in terms of controlling a game. But you need to if you're going to be able to push on and beat these top sides. And this was really a group deciding game for them where they never really showed up.
Yeah, I think this game and the game against Israel really showed up Ventura's his insistence on playing this. It's not even, it's a 4-2-4, four attackers, which is ridiculous. It doesn't work. And against Spain, they did, like Mark said, they created a few chances. And against Israel on Tuesday, the front line was just so static. It was just, you had four guys up front and there's no movement, there's no nobody dropping back, nobody dropping inside, and it really just doesn't work. Spain was almost like the kind of precursor to Israel, which was like the full illness. And like I mentioned before, if you're playing against Spain, you need your midfielders to be A, on form, and they need to kind of be able to dominate against that Spanish midfield. And Italy just had no chance at all.
The reason why I want to touch on the Italians and perhaps the lack of quality perhaps in the side that they have at the moment, and also the disruption in formation and style that they're still lacking to really get a hold of, is because now everyone will look at Spain and have seen a dominating performance in terms of possession, in terms of goals against a big side in European football, and will be saying, oh, look at this, Spain is surely going to be one of the favourites now for perhaps taking a World Cup, and at least will be a semi-finalist. This will big up the expectation on Spain once again, who, of course, have been having this golden generation of football. Do we need to make sure we just settle things down slightly? Because the wonderful performances from Asensio and Isco that we'll touch on in a minute, perhaps just shadowing the fact that Italy aren't that great a side at this point in time?
Well, you're right in a way, because the simple fact, I mean, I thought Asensio had a bit of a quiet night, but Isco definitely ruled them. And I sort of tweeted during the game, this shows why Italy are a great tournament team, because this wasn't a tournament and they weren't a great team. This is the sort of thing where maybe for Spain it can raise their expectations, but it will certainly lower expectations of what Italy are capable of doing. And the fact is that when they get to Russia, if they get to Russia, you would expect them to grow into the tournament and be much better than they usually are. As for Spain, it's a difficult one because the quality of their team is, you know, it's on a plateau, as it were. It doesn't really change. It kind of, you know, varies a little bit from in terms of defence and attack, but the midfield is always going to deliver that standard, that high standard of performance. And if they're doing it at this stage in time, I would worry that teams in the World Cup are going to find out, because they've got plenty of time, how to beat that and how to work it out.
I'm surprised you said that Asensio perhaps was quieter. I thought he was great as a link man, and he's somebody that is just still continuing. He seems like he and Isco are people now that Spain can build and base a side around for the future.
Yeah, certainly for the future. I just felt like it's the standard of performance that he's created for himself over the last few weeks. He didn't match naturally, he didn't get a goal, and playing through the middle and in that sort of false nine role isn't what he's been doing for Real Madrid, and Real Madrid don't play like Spain, so he does do different things, and you're right, like the linking play is important, but maybe we shouldn't expect him to be getting the goals and everything, because that's not what he's in the Spanish side to do as much.
I think as well, one thing that kind of came to light after when I was looking at all the statistics, in the game Spain only put two crosses in, which is really interesting. I think Italy had double figures in terms of crosses, so it kind of shows you the different styles of play of the two teams, whereas Ventura was wanting Italy to kind of run down the wings with those kind of four up front and swing the balls in from Insigne and Candreva to Belotti and Immobile, whereas Spain, they were all about the link-up play, the one-twos, the triangles, trying to get in behind the defence, and they did it a number of times as well. So I think what could possibly happen to give Spain a bit of a kind of different tactic, if you like. They've got this false nine, clearly it can work. And then you can have Morata, possibly David Villa, somebody else coming in to play as a striker to then get the ball into the box from the wide areas as well. So I think this game has kind of shown Julian Lopetegui that he has options and he can play in different styles, which I think, if Spain are going to go far in the World Cup, then that's something which I think will be really key.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look at the false number nine and how, as we've talked about, the midfield six, if you will, and particularly that more attacking three, they just roam around the area, around that final third. There's nowhere where you can pin down, oh, Isco's definitely playing on the left. 5 minutes later, he'll have dragged across to the right, or be playing in the heart of the pitch. David Silva, or they'll be lurking on the side of the 18-yard box, and always just keeping possession and play. It almost showed as well, I thought, at times, Dov, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but you don't need a big forward man to be able to hold up play if you've got a couple of players that can just be that little outlet ball 5 yards further back in a pocket of space, and you can then still have time to allow the rest of the attack to come and get forward and build up play with you.
No, definitely. And the weird thing as well is when they were doing that, the amount of times that Dani Carvajal ended up in the box ready to shoot was ridiculous. Because when I was doing the report for it, and I was thinking, wait a minute, is that cocaine? No, it's not. It's Dani Carvajal. And I think I made that mistake about three times because I couldn't believe is that he was the one that was furthest up the park. And that's because of the way that Spain played. They were passing it around, enabling the fullbacks to get forward. And even I think for the last goal for Morata, who was at the set him up? It was Sergio Ramos galloping up the field by himself with Morata by his side. So it's like this team's just, they've got attacking outlets everywhere. And obviously Ramos was desperate for a goal at the Bernabeu. I think he took about two free kicks and a million shots and God knows what else. So I mean, right, they've got great midfielders that bounce around each other and can play that false nine. But then the defensive players, Ramos, Piqué, Carvajal, Alba, they're always dangerous on the attack as well. So it's, you need to be defensively on top of your game to be able to cope with that, and on Saturday Italy were nowhere near.
I was going to ask you if you thought Sergio Ramos would have made that charging run forward to set up Morata were it not in the Bernabeu. I mean, he is a guy that loves to play in front of the home fans. He's so passionate about the city of Madrid and the Real Madrid supporters, and being in that arena, as you say, it seemed like he was just itching to try and get his name on the score sheet. I don't think he'll get too many more free kicks after that early one, will he?
Well, yeah, well, that was the thing. He tried the first one, and then that was rubbish. And then Isco was like, right, I'll have the second one and put it in the back of the net. So I think that kind of settled the free kick debate.
Let's talk about Isco. Mark, 12 months ago, this was a guy that was potentially going to be on his way out of Real Madrid and certainly couldn't hold down a regular starting spot in Zidane's rotation. Now he's looking like he's becoming an essential player for both club and country. It's been a phenomenal change to his career in just 1 year.
Well, we had a really good piece on an opinion piece on the website over the last couple of days saying that Isco wasn't in the team then because he simply wasn't playing as he's playing now. It's very straightforward when you think about it, that his form has just, it's kind of out of nowhere in a sense, because he wasn't, you know, getting that run of games in Zidane's or Lopetegui's team 12 months ago. He wasn't getting 8 or 9 games to go on, show us what you could do. He really had to pull it out in few opportunities, and that gave him the momentum to really carry that into the more games, the more appearances that he's having now. And as we say, we look at Spain and how the golden generation, they've certainly, Xavi's never really been replaced. Iniesta will go potentially after the World Cup or after the subsequent European Championships. They need replacing, and Isco, he has a, you know, 10 years in him really, and if he can form a partnership with Asensio, Koke, players that are going to be there for a long time, you really got to think, is there a country that has that sort of quality of midfielder coming through at the moment?
I think it was yourself actually on the podcast, probably about midway through last season, when Isco started to really show that he was finding his form again, and you made the point, well, he's had 6 games in the team now, this is a man that's just playing and playing good football because he's got that regular chance now to get on the pitch and to get his chemistry and cohesion going with the players around him, and showing that in that Spain squad. What about what the result says for Lopetegui? Because this is a man that was under great amounts of pressure to take on this Spain side as the golden generation starts to fade and continues to fade, and build in perhaps a new generation of great Spanish footballers at the national team level. And not only that, with the amount of success that Spain have had in the last few years internationally, there's a great pressure on him in general to be able to deliver, to get his side through this group and to do it. Obviously they're not guaranteed their World Cup place yet, but to be on the verge of it in a group that had a nation like Italy in it, it shows that he's risen to the challenge in his first 12 months in charge.
He's done well. When I was at the England game they played, they drew 2-2 in the last couple of minutes, got 2 goals late on. I was surprised by how dogged and how determined they were, and I think that's what he's added. He has added that sort of hunger, that dressing room unity that certainly wasn't there at the World Cup, and it probably wasn't there at Euro 2016 either. He's added that sort of sense of togetherness, and it's kind of, you know, modern football relies on that, I think, with the level of ego and everything that I think players have these days. It's very important to make sure that everyone's pointing in the right direction. And perhaps we're comparing it to eras or the last few years where Spain have been a little bit complacent, I think. And now we're moving forward with a team that has had to suffer, and now they're going to actually progress into a team that can win again.
Dov, it was a perfect time just finally on the Italy game to be playing in the Bernabeu as well, after the falling out between the national team and the stadium, the club, if you will, a first time back for a long time in that arena, to be taking on Italy like that. I mean, the atmosphere must have just been electric. It came through on the television when I was watching it. What was it like being in that ground for the national team's return to it?
Oh, it was mad. Like, I managed to get outside the stadium. I thought I would get there quite early. And I was outside around about 3 hours, more or less, before kickoff. And it was crazy. It was crazy. There was, honestly, obviously thousands and thousands of fans all around, and obviously the little kids had their little vuvuzelas, which was doing my head in. Every time you walk around, all you could hear was little horns and vuvuzelas going off, and I was getting annoyed. I'm an angry man. But then obviously in the stadium as well, it was, obviously I was at the return door, the previous fixture between the two, at the Juventus Stadium, and obviously the Italian fans were getting up for it, and they had their little choreographies and stuff like that arranged. But the atmosphere at the Bernabeu was really something else, and it was something, I think I spoke to another Marca English guy, Ewan McTeer, about before the game, that obviously this is a special one for Madrid because they've always played at the Calderon, because like you say, the disagreements between the Football Federation and Real Madrid, but you could tell that the fans really appreciated it, and they were really kind of up for it, and they did. Honestly, it was one of the best international atmospheres I've had the pleasure to witness firsthand. Although I don't think Gerard Piqué liked it very much, because he was getting a few whistles and jeers every time he touched the ball. I don't know if you've managed to hear that through the television pictures.
Oh, yeah. It came through. Oh, that came through. There was at one point in the commentary, they said, oh, it seemed like he's getting cheered. And then on the second one, it was like, oh, no, that's not a cheer.
Yeah, because when they read his name out, when the team sheets and the names were getting read out, obviously, like Ramos and all the other guys in the Spain team had said, don't boo Gerard Piqué because you're going to boo all of us. And it was kind of like half the stadium kind of cheered, but then the other half like whistled. But then as soon as the game started and they touched the ball, it was just like, right, no, we don't like him anymore. That was it, done.
He's not going to be making a move to the Bernabeu anytime soon, is he, Gerard Piqué? And if he does, the jeers from the Catalan crowd will be a lot harsher. He might be seeing another pig's head at some point if that move ever took place, that's for sure. So they've got Israel away and Albania as their remaining games. Of course, it was the 8-0 victory, biggest away win that Spain have ever had in competition against Liechtenstein last night. Do we need to touch on that, gentlemen, at all? I mean, that's just simple as simple does. 8-0 victory kind of says everything.
What can you say? What can you say? Spain played their second team and won 8-0, so...
I think the...
Very good.
It's, you know, arguably you can't take these things for granted, quote-unquote, because France drew 0-0 with Luxembourg. But looking at the highlights, I think France's draw with Luxembourg featured a very good Luxembourg goalkeeping performance. Spain's 8-0 win over Liechtenstein quite inevitably featured one of the worst goalkeeping performances that, you know, you can have. So,
yeah, if you get onto marker.com/EN, you can see the fumble from the keeper that allowed Isco to get on his name on the score sheet once again. I mean, the guy can't stop scoring, but if you're going to gift him it like that, then you've got all sorts of problems, as they did that night against Spain. Right, let's move away from the international break, because the Spanish have pretty much booked themselves. One win away is what is coming out from the camp, but it's pretty much in the bag now. They'll be topping that World Cup qualification group. Let's go back to the domestic business. Of course, La Liga's coming up once again on the weekend. Real Madrid against Levante. It's an interesting tie. Barcelona taking on Espanyol, the Barcelona derby. But wouldn't mind just quickly touching on the transfer market once again. We didn't see the Mbappe move to Real Madrid that perhaps we thought. We didn't see the mass exodus from Barcelona that we thought perhaps we were going to see. There was no deal done for Diego Costa between Chelsea and Atletico Madrid. What has the transfer window meant in terms of La Liga in general for you gentlemen, particularly as the Neymar-Barcelona spat continues to just carry on after the most drawn-out transfer affair that we've had for a long time? And these two just can't let bygones be bygones, and bickering words once again between Barcelona president Josep Maria Bartomeu and Neymar. Neymar calling the Barca president a joke after the Barca president said that he wished he'd never trusted Neymar and his father. I mean, it's all so petty, but the transfer window overall for you, Dov, what's it meant?
It's been a bit crazy, if I'm being perfectly honest. The fees involved, players possibly gone, possibly not gone. Obviously, there was Ronaldo was going to leave Real Madrid. Real Madrid were going to sign Mbappe. James Rodriguez has moved to Bayern Munich. And obviously, then the big Neymar transfer. And then kind of the... It's almost like the chases, and it's like Barcelona were trying to get a new girlfriend that kind of failed a few times, and in terms of Verratti and Coutinho, and then they managed to find Dembele somewhere. It went hiding for a bit, so it's kind of there's been a few big stories, interesting stories, and kind of the fallout from it as well. Like normally you kind of get a transfer and that's almost it, done and dusted, but for whatever reason this summer, particularly at Barcelona, there seems to be bad blood that nobody wants to kind of just let bygones be bygones almost, and everybody wants to have the last word and have the kind of their say, rather than just saying, all right, okay, Neymar's moved, got loads of money, relax, like don't worry about it basically. But it seems like they just want to keep dragging everything through the mud, and that's not going to help either the player or Barcelona.
And it's interesting that La Liga itself as an organisation just kind of putting its name into the hat and saying, look, we want to see financial fair play investigations into Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City. There's almost like an element of the jealous ex, if you will, isn't
there? I think myself and Mark probably possibly spoke about this before, not on a podcast before, but it's something like the teams in La Liga have done, particularly Real Madrid and Barcelona, have done for 2 years now. They've been the teams that the other clubs, or they've been the two teams where other clubs have been selling their players to for exorbitant amounts of money. And as soon as kind of Barcelona make their interest known, or Real Madrid make their interest known, that's essentially saying, right, the player's going to go there. And I think Verratti this summer was an example of that, where Barcelona thought, right, if they wanted Verratti, made it clear to him and his people that they wanted him, that they would eventually get him. And I think this summer has seen the financial clout, or not even the financial clout, just the resourcefulness and the personality of other teams come through, where they've said no. I mean, you would have expected Liverpool to let Coutinho go if Barcelona came in with a 100 plus million euro offer, and they just stood their ground and say he's not going anywhere, tough. And then PSG did the same, said we're going to buy Neymar, what are you going to do about it? Nothing. Paid his claws. And I think it's kind of like those two teams kind of getting a comeuppance in a sense, because it's something that they've done in the opposite direction for years.
Yeah, as I say, there's an element of jealousy muscling in on Barcelona and Real Madrid's turf. You don't normally say no to them, but some clubs and players have done this season. Mark, what about you in terms of where it's left the top two in Spain, the transfer window? The squad numbers have been announced, the official squad numbers for this season, until obviously the January transfer window and more comings and goings, of course. But you look at the squads now that Barcelona and Real Madrid have for their La Liga campaigns, and there's just such a lack of depth, you feel, in Barca's side compared to Madrid.
There is. I think if you know, a direct comparison from where we were in May to where we are now in September, you had in May, Real Madrid were happy, Barcelona were in a bit of trouble. In September, Real Madrid are happy, Barcelona are still in a bit of trouble. So in that sense, nothing's really changed. Mm. And thinking of the quality of, you know, where we're at in who's going to win the league, Barcelona and Real Madrid, the gap between them still isn't that great. We might see it expand over the next few weeks and months. Time will tell. The problem is that the atmosphere around Barcelona is quite toxic. And as we mentioned there, they are mystified as to why they couldn't get these players from doing all the old tricks. Whereas Real Madrid have actually, they've not, you know, the problem with losing Morata and then not signing a replacement might come back to bite them. But as things stand, Zidane's in control. He's got a big squad. And I think they're quite happy with that.
Well, Zidane will be able to flex his muscles against Levante on the weekend, on the Saturday midday kickoff from La Liga. Levante unbeaten so far in their return to La Liga. But this is one that, much like Spain against Liechtenstein, we're expecting, despite Real Madrid's little stumble against Valencia before the international break, that Los Blancos should be able to get past Levante side that has added some experience to it. But it's perhaps not a side that's going to be pushing it much further than staying afloat in La Liga this season, Mark.
No, I don't think Levante, oh, you know, they're one of the better teams that came up, certainly perhaps the best, and they've shown that already. They can score goals, which the other two perhaps can't so much. The prospect for them on Saturday, they're away to Real Madrid, and I think we ran a piece a few after the draw they had with Valencia that Madrid aren't actually, you know, they're no better at the Bernabeu than they are away. Arguably, they're worse at home. So Levante, if they nick an early goal, you've got a sense of perhaps something's going to happen, but ultimately it's very hard to see anything other than Real Madrid scoring quite a few goals in this.
And Dov, for you, the Barcelona derby between Barcelona and Espanyol. Kike Sanchez Flores has brought a bit of organisation to this Espanyol side. They've also got some weapons in attack. Is it a good time to have this game for them off the back of an international break, going to the Camp Nou against a Barca side that's still just not quite in the groove of things in terms of being too happy with their squad, their system, and have to now start bringing in the new signing Dembele into that front three?
Yeah, I think it is. It will be a good time. The bigger teams, kind of, when they've got all their players coming back from international duty, tend to struggle a little bit. Obviously, Messi was away with Argentina as well, and Dembele coming in for his first game to see how he fits in. It'll be interesting. I do think Barcelona will have enough to overpower Espanyol regardless, but I think there could be the chances of a slight upset for the other team from Barcelona.
I think this is just one that you've got to perhaps just put a little bit of money down if you're a gambling man on a cheeky
one-all
draw.
I don't gamble, Ollie. No.
neither do I, my friend, but I'm tempted by it with a one-all draw. Not normally down. It's the Grand National or nothing for me, normally. Mark, you're going to be hopefully out there for Valencia against Atletico Madrid and in the Mestalla for that. I mean, it's always a cracking atmosphere in the big games at Mestalla for Valencia whenever they welcome either Barca or the two Madrid sides. And this is a game that is quite difficult to predict considering the performance that Valencia put in against Real Madrid before the break and Atletico having that massive victory as well before the international break. It's a tough one to call this.
Well, Atletico certainly in the last couple of seasons have been very good after the international breaks. They have an incredible record of wins straight off the bat from these sort of games. So perhaps that makes them favourites. Valencia they've just got their good result, and you sense with these sort of teams that were effectively still getting used to their new coach, when they get one good result, then maybe they take their eye off the ball and think, oh, well, will do the same thing, and maybe it won't work, maybe it will. But I expect there to be hopefully a few goals. Certainly, the stats say that there should be, and I think Atletico will win it.
We'll be chatting with you next week then about your experience in the Mestalla with that one. Elsewhere, decent games to keep your eye on. Girona taking on Athletic Bilbao, the new side up in La Liga. Girona have made a real impact to start their campaign, taking on a Bilbao side that have been a little hit and miss so far this season. Villarreal take on Real Betis as well, and Villarreal looking to bounce back from their opening day loss against Levante. Very unexpected, that one. And Sevilla taking on Eibar as well. And you know, you just know that Ewan McTeer is going to be keeping his eyes on that one. Gentlemen, we will come back in 7 days' time and talk... Oh, 6 days' time, actually, because we'll come back on a Tuesday next week and talk about all things La Liga and, of course, a build-up to the Champions League as well, as that is just around the corner. Although it has to be said that Real Madrid have a slightly easy task compared to what they could have had for their opening game up against Apoel. Next Wednesday in 7 days' time. We'll be talking about all of that and more next time. Dov, a big thanks for joining us once again. We know you need to catch a plane, mate, so we'll let you get away.
Cheers, guys.
Good luck getting through security as well, Dov. And Mark, always a pleasure, never a chore, my friend.
Thank you, mate. I'll see you next time.
Remember, you can catch Mark Mayo on Twitter. That's that Mark Mayo, at that Mark Mayo. You can catch Dov at Dov Chivone, at Dov Chivone, S-C-H-I-A-V-O-N-E, for anyone that is asking. Get on to Marker in English on Twitter as well, all lowercase, all one word. If you fancy it, just type it into Twitter. It will come up nice and easily. On Facebook as well, just type in Marker in English, search, like, and enjoy the page with all the breaking news that Spanish football has to offer. And of course, get on to iTunes and Audio Boom. Type in the search bar Marker in English or I on La Liga. You'll find the podcast. Like, review, rate, and enjoy it. And come back in 6 days' time when we return. The international break and the transfer window perhaps slightly drab for some people in Spain. But with the national team cruising past the Italians, it's all on to Russia, surely now, for the World Cup and perhaps another major trophy at an international tournament for the Spanish. Talking of major trophies, the Champions League is back next week, as is La Liga this weekend. Until then, take care and have a good one. Enjoy the football.